BBC Bite Sized is launching more than 100 new guides linked to the Key Stage 3 curriculum, covering English, history, geography, biology, chemistry, and physics, and designed to support students' progress through their Key Stage 3 journey. Authored with expert teachers, the new guides are more interactive and engaging, include step-by-step and structured content to support progress from Year 7 through to Year 9, and brand new teacher-defined courses to guide students through the content and make links between topics. You can find more at www.bbc.co.uk/bitesize and click on secondary.
Hello and welcome to this bonus edition of the TES podcast. I'm Senior Editor Simon Locke, and today I'm joined by two educators to discuss a topic close to both of their hearts. Recently in the UK, STEM education has suffered both from a lack of specialist teachers and from an inability to appeal to a diverse range of students. But with the pandemic forcing science and engineering to the top of the agenda, and with technology now embedded in teaching and learning, perhaps the appeal of STEM subjects and the audience who go on to take these courses is about to increase. I'm joined today by science teacher, Senko, and founder of the Young Black Teachers Network, Kemi Oliyede, alongside principal of Livingston Academy and longtime tech pioneer, Kimberly Elms. We'll be taking a look at what traditionally held STEM subjects back and how technology has helped increase both the appeal and the scope of what happens within the STEM curriculum. Hi, Kim, Kemi, thank you very much for joining me on the TES podcast today. Really appreciate your time. I realise it's a Monday, it's October, you're probably knee deep in hundreds of tasks. So thank you very much for joining me to talk about STEM. Welcome. We are here to talk about STEM. We're here to talk about how technology has sort of influenced and improved the teaching of STEM over the last few years, and especially over the last 18 months. Is now a particularly good time to engage kids with STEM subjects. We've seen scientists become front page news. We've seen a surge in technology. You know, startups and entrepreneurs have come to the fore during COVID. Do you think this is perhaps a slight sort of silver lining of the last 18 months in terms of STEM subjects? Kim, what's your impression?
Well, I think that yes, there's no time like the present to engage in STEM subjects, but I don't think that just what's happened over the last 18 months has made them more important. I feel like all times are good times to engage in STEM subjects, that those need to take some priorities in our school system.
Definitely. Kemi, is now the time, or are you a big STEM advocate? Do you think it's always been the time?
I agree it's always been the time. However, I do think now is definitely the time, because living through this pandemic, we're constantly being bombarded with information, scientific information to do with the pandemic itself. Students are using technology a lot more, so it's a nice way to engage them in the use of technology or science, because a lot of students try to, or they see it as, you know, science or technology is something that's abstract. It's not something they can relate to. But, well, how does this affect me in my everyday life? If you're using technology every day, you're seeing the impact it plays in your everyday life. So I do think now is a great time to take advantage of this surge of interest in STEM and continue to engage students with it.
Kemi, how does teaching at the moment compare to your early experiences of technology in the classroom and STEM subjects?
My earliest memory of using technology like a computer in a classroom was when I was in year 4, and I hated it. I found it boring. It wasn't interesting. The teacher was very monotone. I remember his voice, and it was just so annoying. I thought, I hated this subject. I don't want to do this. And because of that, my interest in the subject, it just plummeted. I thought, yeah, this is not for me. I know that now. However, as I've gotten older, I have more of an interest in STEM, in technology. And if I had the experiences, if the opportunities that the students have now, if I had that when I was younger, maybe I would have been in a different career. So yeah, my experience as a student from primary school to secondary, I did not enjoy technology or using computers in school. It was boring to me. However, now it's a lot more interesting and a lot more engaging.
Kim, your sort of STEM inspiration came from closer to home, am I right?
I'm old enough to predate technology in school as we know it. My first computer was given to me by my father for Christmas when I was 9 years old, and it was a Tandy from Radio Shack. And for those of your listeners who can get in the Wayback Machine, it was a Tandy 16K RAM computer, and it didn't have an operating system, so you had to use basic programming. So I had a book that I, as a nine-year-old, learned how to do basic programming in, and I remember I was very proud of the day that I could have my name scroll across the screen ad infinitum. So that was my first memories. And then by the time I got to high school, we didn't have computer labs, but we were taught keyboarding, especially girls, because you might grow up and hopefully become a secretary at some stage in your life, or you're lucky. And so we learned keyboarding on a black screen with green typing. We didn't even have Microsoft Word. So my school technology experience is pretty much nil.
Do you think perhaps that perhaps parents out there, and to a certain extent pupils, do they have a sort of a stilted view of STEM subjects? Perhaps they think of Bunsen burners and lab coats, and they don't associate it with perhaps tech and that sort of side of things. Is that a problem?
I definitely think that's the case. I think parents, we're only human, but we tend to brag or drag along our own baggage of what we thought school was and what school was for us, along to what we expect our own children's experience to be. So I think there's a lot of misconceptions with parents in terms of what you do in technology and what computer science is all about and who does computer science and who does engineering. So I think that that's something that we should be very purposeful in reframing, not only for our students, but for our parents, who can often have quite an influence on their own children's identities and their choices that they make and what they do, not only in school, but as a career.
Kemi, is things slightly different for you out in Dubai? Do you see that sort of influence from an outdated view of STEM?
Not really. So we have of course, in science labs, we still do science practicals and so on. Students do wear goggles and lab coats and so on. But I think that we have the technology department on the opposite side of the corridor. And one thing I love when I look into the classrooms is that although students are still doing things like woodwork, using the actual, doing practical skill, using actual equipment as well, they also use laptops and different apps on their laptops or their devices to kind of marry the practical aspect as well as the technological aspect of the subject together. So you can see how the two things can merge together and how they can work to the benefit of the student. And when students see that, when parents see what students are doing, it breaks down those preconceptions they had before, to show them that even though students are learning practical skills with their hands, and they're using their gross motor skills, fine motor skills, they're also able to improve their computer literacy skills and technological skills as well.
Of course, yeah, because it is important that, the lab coat side of things might really grab a lot of students, but seeing there being more to STEM than that is really important. Do you think the last 18 months and, online learning, hybrid learning and that transition and just having technology more infused with the teaching experience, do you think that's helped speed that process along? Do you think kids are more engaged in these subjects because they see that it's close to them?
I definitely feel I definitely feel like it has. So over the last 18 months, you know, almost 2 years now that we've been in this pandemic, we've had to teach online. We've had to use a lot more of online resources and different ways to engage students. And students have become a lot more tech savvy. I know I definitely have. On top of that, it's allowed us to still be able to teach the content to students, right? In science, but ensuring that they have a different way of learning. Not the traditional way of, you know, being in a classroom, sitting in front of a board. Now you maybe have to go and, you know, use your research skills. Maybe we can use like a simulator online. I know I've been able to use BBC Bite Size. I know they've been teaching like the nervous system. They've had, you know, some diagrams on there and some quizzes on there that students can use to assess themselves. And things like that have helped to ensure that students are learning and making progress so that when they came back to school, although I know a lot of people in the government will say that students were behind and so on, and I'm not saying that students weren't behind, but at least there weren't too many gaps in certain areas where I taught them, because on top of me teaching them online, they've had a chance to go away and try these things out on themselves on, you know, things like BBC Bite Size and using simulators, like I've said, to do or to see how certain things work. So at least if you can't do a practical lesson in class, in, you know, in a science lab, you're still able to see how it would work online.
I've seen kind of both sides of that coin. So I was recently working in international schools and the remote learning experience that I witnessed in that sector is markedly different from the remote learning experience that the students that I have now had, in generally speaking. So I think that for me, it's important that we not paint this experience and we don't tar everyone with the same brush necessarily, because I think some kids did have a fairly robust opportunity to engage with more self-paced learning and to go back to our old time. You know, throughout human history, people have always learned through play and through experience and through tinkering, self-directed learning. And it during pandemic times in certain situations, I know in for example, in the international school market that I was in, we returned to that. We had time and space where the kids all had devices at home. They all had stable internet access. And most of them had at least one adult at home at all times that could offer help or assistance if and when there wasn't a teacher who was available online. I've now interfaced with children for whom that was not reality. They didn't have a device. They were waiting on the government to give them a device, and it didn't come until very late in the game. And then there was the problem with internet access at home being either not available or on a 4G dongle that they got through a sort of charity scheme. And then the school itself that they were at didn't have necessarily deep enough resourcing to get the teachers to be able to teach in a remote way that was impactful. So yes, I've seen where the pandemic has resulted in a turning of the key, so to speak, for some areas. And then depending on the situation of the student, it didn't help at all.
No, of course. Yeah, important when we're talking about tech to remember that, yeah, there was a big disparity for lots of pupils. Do you think perhaps the sort of whole tech world and everything that we can access now, do you think students perhaps feel more at home in that? Does it level the playing field a little bit, as opposed to having sort of the world of lab coats and those sorts of things which feel quite alien? The idea of designing an app, something we can relate to, is sort of, you know, from an engineering point of view, is more accessible than the idea of building perhaps a bridge, or do you know what I mean? It sort of makes it hit home.
Yeah, definitely. I think using technology in lessons has leveled the playing field a little bit in a way, because like Kimberly said, it allows students to kind of pace themselves or go at their own pace rather than you know, you're in a classroom and you're all doing the same thing at the same time. It allows children or students to go back and learn other things, like go over some things they may have missed. I feel like it's just rather the traditional way of doing things, maybe in the science lab, is not necessarily outdated, but there are other ways that students can learn. And it's important to understand that using technology allows the classroom to be a bit more inclusive, because not every child, so for example, I teach a lot of students who have special education needs. Not every child is able to write, or their handwriting is illegible. And if they're able to use an iPad or a laptop or use a certain app or a website to learn to help them, it does level the playing field a little bit more. It does make it more inclusive. And every child is still learning the 21st century skills that they'll need, you know, when they enter the job market. So yeah, I'll do think so a little bit.
I agree. I think that and with the pandemic and just in terms of teachers' approach to understanding, really, you know, that sometimes fair isn't equal, and to understand that if our primary goal is learning and mastery of skills and understandings, that there are going to be some children who get it in the first go, and some that are going to need 3, 4, 5 goes. And if it really is that important that they learn it, then instead of rewarding speed of learning or memory and recall, that we're rewarding grit and persistence, and we're honoring the fact that they're learning what's important and not necessarily sticking to a timeline. But that's where I think this idea pushes the boundaries of how we define education and school, and that is what's exciting. And if we can leverage the conversations that are happening around STEM to push people into rethinking, you know, why do we have grade levels or year levels, and why do we restrict it to a 9 or 10 month learning window? What unnecessarily we're putting boundaries and restrictions on kids, which cause us to label them ahead or behind, when in reality those are completely false constructs that we're enforcing onto a human being and their learning that I'm not really sure need to be there anymore.
You think, Kim, this is a good opportunity to reassess some of those sort of those norms that we've just come to sort of fall back on?
I would hope so. I mean, if nothing else, that we could take away from this really crazy and not so pleasant experience, that at least we should be reflective enough to be able to ask the question, why do we do it this way? And is it, you know, as the whole workforce and the way that we approach work has changed, why wouldn't we think about how we school children? Why would we expect it to stay the same? I think it's almost lunacy to think that we would continue doing it the same old way, and yet expect them to be prepared for a completely different scenario once they're in the world of work. It just doesn't it doesn't add up in my view.
No, of course. And to both of you, and perhaps Kemi, you first. Do you agree it's a good opportunity to rethink a few things? And secondly, how do you see technology playing more of a part in that?
It is definitely a good thing to rethink, and just, you know, things need to change, because like Kimberly said, we can't expect students to be prepared for life after school or the working world if we're not moving with the times, ensuring that they have all the opportunities available to them and making sure that they're exposed to these different things in STEM. Now, how long that's going to take, I don't know, because I feel like things are forever changing or there's always something that comes up. But I'm hoping that with time, especially for students with special educational needs, especially for them, they're going to need that extra support on that understanding to ensure that then they're not all painted with the same brush. They're not all working at the same levels. We can't just say, you know, a child is working at this particular level when we're not catering to their needs and we're not allowing them to try different things or innovative ways of teaching. So hopefully the use of technology in STEM, we can address those issues and with time, those things will improve.
For real, I think I agree. And having the technological tools that we have now and the huge growth in educational technology that happened over the pandemic has allowed us to differentiate and personalize instruction to greater and greater degrees. Then there's things that we're able to do now that even 5 years ago were a pipe dream. So it behooves us to capitalize on it and keep running forward with it. I'm worried that as we return back and get into the brick and mortar system, that we will lay this down and we'll go back to what was easy, which is lockstep direct instruction, because it's straightforward to do and it's very easy to measure. So I'm constantly pushing on that boundary, see if we can maintain that forward progress, what I think is forward anyway. Some people may disagree.
No, absolutely. I think a lot of people are on that wavelength. I think the idea that there's too much emphasis on knowledge retention and not enough emphasis on problem solving and developing learners is an increasingly popular narrative that hopefully STEM can help. You know, if we can take some of these learnings from STEM and apply them to other subjects, like you mentioned, I think that would be great.
I feel like when it comes to STEM, even myself at times, students kind of think that STEM is like an abstract thing. They can't relate it to real life. I know I've kind of mentioned this before, but because it's not relatable to them in certain scenarios, or because some of these things are so far-fetched that they don't see themselves in these scenarios, they don't have an interest in it. They don't feel like, you know, well, they feel like maybe this is not for them, or STEM is not for them, should I say. But I feel like with the use of technology, even during this pandemic, with students getting familiar with certain apps, with students being able to try different things, although, like Kimberly said, not every child was awarded the same, you know, privilege of having a device or being in a home where there was internet access and so on. Or even if they did have a device or the internet, they may have had to share with their siblings. It has been difficult. And because of that, I feel like they might just see it as, oh, well, though we're using technology now and I'm able to access work from home, this still isn't for me because I just feel like I haven't had a good experience with it.
We sort of touched on the issue of diversity in STEM. And obviously, yeah, the idea of people not thinking it's not for them, not seeing people in those roles and doing those things is that what underlines the problem with the diversity in STEM?
I don't know if it underlines, but I definitely played a huge part because I'll be honest with you, growing up, I didn't even know there were Black people in technology. I didn't know that. I didn't know that there were Black inventors or Black scientists because I never saw them. They weren't in my textbooks. They weren't in my classroom. They weren't on my TV or on anything I watched. So I didn't even know that, you know, a Black man invented the traffic light or the fridge or the AC system. I thought, oh, no, these things my people don't even do, so why am I even bothering? But as I grew up and I started learning about what people like me, what they have contributed to the world we live in today, I feel proud. And that sense of pride makes me interested in STEM. It makes me want to think, okay, I know there are Black women in STEM. I know there are Black men in STEM. I know there are young people coming up and creating and they have innovative ideas. So we're like, it gives me a sense of pride, which makes me interested. And once you've caught my attention and I'm interested in something, you're more likely to keep me engaged. And that's something we need to remember with some of our students, that sometimes if the only type of role model they have in STEM is someone who doesn't look like them, someone they can't relate to, someone they have no common interest with, they may never be interested in that subject ever again or going down a certain career path. And that's already hindering them. That's a barrier that's already put in place before they're even given a chance.
Totally. And I guess technology in a sense, can help that. It's, it just widens people's, you know, world of experience. They can connect with perhaps inventors of color, and you know, they have an a touch point with things outside of the classroom and outside of perhaps their community, which can help sort of inspire and get more people into STEM.
Sure. I think it's also been a way through technology. It's opened the doors for me as an educator to get other people to be in front of my kids. So, and it's flattened the world in the sense that I can reach out to people who are practicing in digital media and design, science, and to say, look, I have a group of Asian girls who are really interested in X, and I see that you're doing X. I see, you know, on whether it's on Instagram or Twitter or whatever. Could we have a Zoom session, or could we collaborate on something, just so that they have an opportunity to see and hear from you? And people have been incredibly generous with their time and their virtual time to reach out to kids who are perhaps, you know, reflect how they were when they were in school. And I think that's been an incredible gift the pandemic has provided.
Just to add to that, Kimberly, I agree, because leading up to National Careers Week that we had in March 2021, from last year, September, I was able to put together it's something that I call Future Fridays. So every Friday we had people from different sectors, and most of them were from the STEM field, you know, science, technology, engineering, and maths, to show students like there are people who look just like you. And there are so many jobs within this industry alone that you may be interested in. But the fact that these students got exposed to different careers in STEM. So for example, I had one student who he does a vocational construction course, and he met a surveyor, he met an architect. And when he saw what they were doing and they did activities with them in the session, he was just like, I didn't even know this was possible. I didn't even know I could do this. Or I didn't even know that I could develop this skill. And just exposing these kids to a range of people who are all in the same sector or the same industry, but they have different roles, that has made a big difference. And using stuff like Twitter or Instagram and reaching out to people, and people are willing to come in and actually show these children, you know, this is what we're able to do, and this is what you can do. You can even do more than what we're doing in the future. It's been great, and people have been very, very helpful and inspiring and motivating these students as well, especially considering that we are in a pandemic and a lot of them have been, you know, just cooped up at home.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the overwhelming response from schools is if you do reach out, people in industry are really willing to help and showcase what you do, and they want to inspire this next generation. So actually using, like you say, social media and technology to enable that is such a powerful tool. So do you think, we touched on it already, but using technology and within STEM subjects, there's a real powerful you know, method there of preparing students for the workplace. Do you see that? Is STEM particularly powerful for that, do you think, guys? Kim, what do you think?
I do, and I think it's not just related to STEM careers. I think that using ideas when we're looking at applying principles in science and math through engineering, it's the idea of just having whether you want to call it computational thinking or systems thinking or design thinking, whatever, having a procedure of thinking and problem solving and being able to work with other people and having to communicate, it really focuses us on those innately human skills. And that's what is going to become the golden ticket, I think, in the workforce of the future, is that as the more routine and manual skills or manual jobs that those can be done by computers and machines. Now we need to really focus on the things that can't be done by machines. And that is managing a team and human resourcing and all of those components that focus on the human resource. And I think I could be a great scientist or a great engineer, but if I can't work with a team or I don't have an international sensitivity that allows me to be open to people of other cultures and other languages and be able to work with them shoulder to shoulder, then that's wasted skills and knowledge, right? So I think that's really where I'm trying to put a lot of my energy into for these kids, is to really focus on those what had traditionally been called, they just, you know, I don't know, 21st century skills, although they aren't skills that were just used in the 21st century. They were used in the past and will continue to be used in the future. But whatever those soft skills are that we talk about, critical thinking and teamwork and interpersonal communication, emotional intelligence, all that kind of stuff, that's really where the money's at.
Definitely. So guys, have you got some examples of how you're sort of integrating EdTech into your STEM teaching? Kemi, you mentioned some of the resources you're using. What other initiatives have you seen come out, especially more recently?
Something that I use when teaching about sales is like a simulator. I can't remember the name of the website, unfortunately, but students can zoom in and zoom out to see like the relative size in comparison of different cells or different organisms in comparison to like the universe that we live in. And it's quite interesting. You zoom in and you can go, you know, you can see things an electron microscope can see. And you zoom out and we're going into space and we're looking at planets and galaxies and so on. And they're just thinking about, we are so small in this universe, miss. I can't believe this. But it's nice to show them that there's so much going on in the world around us. And although I can't take you to space, I can use this website here to show you what it would look like. It's just, I think another thing in terms of using technology to teach is to just being able to, you know, you get that excuse, oh, miss, I forgot my homework at home, I can't do it. But if we're using OneNote or Microsoft Teams and we're using these different apps to teach as well, you have no excuse, you can just upload your homework there. So that has also been beneficial in a way as well, not just with teaching, but ensuring that students have the resources they need and they can access it at any time.
And I'm in a really unique situation where we're all in our school. Our whole school model is built around the idea that technology and digital tools are embedded in every learning experience, and not just that we have a laptop or a Chromebook or an iPad, whatever, but we're actually looking and using like we would in the real world. So we're trying to use real world, up-to-date, ubiquitous technology with our kids. And so we also use rocket books. So we're not even using traditional paper systems, even though we are still using handwriting and things like that. So the amount of information that kids are taking in is, yes, we are using digital simulators and all of our anchor resources are digital. But we also are teaching them about things like file structure management and their digital footprint and personal choice and safety. And it's a huge, huge job to actually think about and plan it. But for these kids, we're trying to pull them into out of the Victorian realm of teaching and learning and using mark books and what have you, and then into the digital space. So it's a big ask, but it's exciting to see. It's exciting to see them experience the world like this, and the pride that they take in us instilling that sense of responsibility in them is pretty cool to see. at the same time, we, you know, we're dealing with 11 and 12 year olds and we make some mistakes and we like to spend a lot of time looking at cat memes. So I won't say that we're always thinking about the cutting edge things. Sometimes it's just it's a funny cat video on YouTube, but that's part of modern living too, isn't it? It's about being able to manage that constant flow and bombardment of information and know how to handle that and also know when to say when and when to put it down and pick up a book, for example, or go outside and kick a football.
Yeah, I think there's always a time for a cat meme. I'm glad to hear it's in the classroom as well. So, guys, I'll finish with a bit of a predictable one, and apologies for this, but where do you see STEM teaching in, say, 10 years' time, when the kids who are perhaps coming into reception now are kind of getting to GCSE and maybe starting to think about their or starting their A-levels, where do you think we're going to be? And then perhaps you could give a sort of idealistic view and perhaps a more realistic one. Kemi, what do you think?
I definitely think we're going to move to more online kind of learning, as in you'll still be in a classroom probably, but definitely more things will be done online rather than the traditional use of, you know, maybe like using textbooks and stuff in school. I think more apps, more simulators, more websites that students will use to learn rather than traditional textbooks, like I mentioned. And I think a lot of students will even come in because I have my nieces of 5 and 6, and the way they know how to use a tablet or an iPad, I'm still trying to get my head around it. I don't know how to do it. So if we have these children in year one and year two who are so tech savvy and they know how to do certain things on certain apps, we already know that learning in a classroom is going to look very different to how it is now in the next 10 years. It may just be completely all technology based. It might be, I don't know.
Wow. How about you, Kim?
Well, firstly, I'd like to take this opportunity to say in 10 years from now, I hope we aren't still talking about GCSEs and A-levels. And that we've moved on from that madness and we've looked more at student-generated evidence to criteria and references so they can show us what they know. And we're focusing on valuing know-how as much as we value know-what. I would hope that we've figured out how to embed digital citizenship throughout the stages so that kids are learning from day one, as soon as they can pick up an iPad, that there's ramifications for what their actions are online and that we're helping them make good decisions and keeping them safe in that space. I also hope that things are more online and digital. I hope we can go back to that, our roots, if you will, of self-directed learning and transformative play, and that we can realize that by sticking with STEM subjects as the priority, we can still learn about history and we can still learn about art, but we can do it in a way that's more inclusive and that is more collaborative and is less about gatekeeping based on a test score or where you went to school or, you know, how much maybe that school might have cost your parents. that's what I hope for in 10 years. I hope that the landscape is significantly different and that 10 years from now, we're not going to be having the same conversation.
I hope so too, in the nicest possible way. Yes, some interesting and ambitious hopes for the future there. But guys, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for having me. Sorry for my tardy arrival.
Not at all. Not at all. Thanks, babe.
Thank you.
BBC Bite Size is launching more than 100 new guides linked to the Key Stage 3 curriculum, covering English, history, geography, biology, chemistry, and physics, and designed to support students' progress through their Key Stage 3 journey. Authored with expert teachers, the new guides are more interactive and engaging, include step-by-step and structured content to support progress from Year 7 through to Year 9, and brand new teacher-defined courses to guide students through the content and make links between topics. You can find more at www.bbc.co.uk/bitesize and click on secondary.